Blog Talk Radio.
Something happened to me last Thursday when I was driving home. I had a couple of miles to go. I looked up and saw a glowing orange object in the sky to the east. It was moving very irregularly. Suddenly, there was intense light all around me. When I came to it,
Strange Round Secret Universe. We've got a great show tonight. This weekend is the Secret Space Program Conference 2011. I'm in a time machine. I got a great guy. He's favorite. Always like him coming on. Always enjoy the conversation. Great investigator. He's like a conspiracy scientist like myself. Let's bring him on, Olaf Phillips.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm great, man. Pretty good. How's your night?
Doing good. Just trying to survive the rain.
Oh, are you guys rained out down there?
Oh, no. But it's been raining quite a bit.
No, I think it's going to be a great weekend. So give us a little inside information. That's what I want.
Sure. What can I tell you?
What's going on this weekend? For a lot of people that's not familiar with the Secret Space Program, please give us our audience a little insight of it.
Well, the conference is attacking it from all angles. You know, we got people talking about history, people talking about money. Me, I'm talking about the end of the world, movies, all kinds of stuff. So, pretty much anything you could imagine. It's a really amazing lineup of. The people will talk about the Secret Space Program in all its different elements. So, you know, it's not to be missed. And they are streaming it, so if you can't get into Texas, if you're rained out or whatever, you can watch it live on the internet, which I think is awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm definitely looking forward to that. Do you know of anything that's going to be a new focus on this year rather than from last year's program?
Well, I can tell you the stuff I'm excited about. Walter Bosley, he's linking up the arrows from the 1857 airship sightings. He's linking that up to the Secret Space Program. John Dyer, who I happen to be in the car with, he's doing an analysis of movies, talking about the secret, Jay. He's doing a link up of the movies as they relate to the Secret Space Program, you know, and media and stuff. So I think those are pretty awesome. There are just too many, you know. Paul LaViolette, he does an amazing job. Joseph Farrell, if you haven't read his books, you know, you got to get into Amazon and buy
Joseph Farrell, I've heard that name. I know who that is. I just can't.
Well, yeah, it's Brotherhood of the Bell, Nazi International, Babylon's Banksters.
Yeah.
He wrote the entry books that most people use to kind of get exposed.
Nice. I bring on Fritz Springmeier a lot, and we BS a lot on the show. And, he came from way back in the 90s, too. You know, I think it's really, you know, I think that around, even in the 90s and mid-90s, even down to the late 90s, a lot of people, and people still don't, but they don't have any knowledge of these secret space programs.
Well, you know, there were guys back in the 90s who were talking about it, like Jim Keith and others. You know, my focus has always been, what I really enjoy talking about is Alternative 3. And Keith wrote, one of the first books on Alternative 3, right? He later died under mysterious circumstances, you know, not long after he wrote the book. But, you know, he was talking about saucers of the Illuminati and others. So there were a lot of people back then that were talking about it. But, you know, I think back in the early 90s, they weren't really ready to listen. The people didn't want to think about UFOs as being some sort of manufactured, human manufactured device. They wanted to see aliens, and, you know, that's where we were in the maturation of that conspiracy theory, right? So I think we've come full circle now, and the beauty of it now is that we can look back and play, you know, play couch quarterback and see all the things that were missed and see the things that we missed and go back and really understand from a completely different perspective, you know, what we're dealing with. And we've had the things like the McKinnon. Yeah. So I think it's good in a way, you know, it's good in a way because we had to mature, you know, as a group. We had to mature into it a little bit. But it makes today now really exciting. You know.
Yeah, it does. It really does because, you know, I'm 31 now. I mean, just turned 31, but it's just like, it seems like I've done research since I was like 14, 13, but I was always, another thing that you mentioned was films. There's going to be a correlation with films and given these secrets to us, but in kind of like Scientology and using the occult, giving paying all that money and getting baby fed knowledge of the occult. But it's kind of like that. Like, and Spielberg is the guy behind it all, and I've always believed that for a long time. I mean, he got wrong, of course, and you know, but you know the whole, but you know what's the real coincidence? You know, even though that the you know, this is stupid, but, you know, the Cubs didn't win, but they were in the World Series. And not only that, you know, and I hate sports. You know, my dad was a coach, but I always played music. You know, I've played punk rock and stuff like that. But, but you know, just because I didn't play sports, though, my dad did teach me the fundamentals of the game, which I think is really important. But what I was saying is it's really important to
Hey, one second.
Oh, sorry about that.
Sorry, I just got here. I had to call in while we were mobile.
Oh, it's cool. No, I was on to something there, man. I got signed for... I remember what I was talking about. The Spielberg thing,
right.
You know, and especially with the aliens, you know,
sure.
He's done a couple alien films, and you know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
It's just like he was an inside man that has all the information, especially, but then you have the other dark side of Hollywood that is that prides on children and. You know, the really dark side of Hollywood, but it's all
sure.
controlled by the same people, and they're all sitting in, you know, maybe calling each other on the phone, eating dinner at each other's house.
Oh, yeah, they all know each other, you know. It's a system. It's an oligarchy, right? So there's a very small number of people at the top who run everything, you know.
Of course.
But, I mean, you need to look no further than Kubrick, right? You know, Jay Widener's done amazing work with the Kubrick stuff. I was talking to Jay just today about the whole Kubrick thing, and you know, his work in dealing with Kubrick in the moon landing, you know, it dovetails nicely into the secret space program, because if you want to argue that the secret space program is real, right, the chances are we're on the moon. So if you're looking at the moon photos and you're thinking, well, there's a moon, well, sure, they're going to cover up, they have to cover up all these structures, right? And so Kubrick
no,
would have been the guy
course.
To do it.
Well, you know, and then, you know, the thing about what, too, is he had, you know, like, diplomatic immunity to, after that, to make any kind of film that he wanted to. But the thing
right.
about what was so awful, he put the clues in the films. Like for instance, for Shining, you know, in The Shining, whenever
right.
Danny's wearing the Apollo sweater.
Apollo, yeah. Sure.
You know, there was go
the octagon, octagon flooring, and actually, you know what's interesting is that there's, if you watch American Horror Story Hotel, I think that's what it's called, the new one. There are a lot of Shining references in that. The Octagon.
Dude, there's a lot of Illuminati shit in that show, dude. Like, I've tried to, like, sometimes, you know how you're made to sit through shows that you particularly don't want to watch? Well, that's been one of them. And, you know, and I've tried to, you know, I try to give shows a chance, stuff like that, but there's Illuminati things, and dude, it goes beyond that though, and perversion, and it seems like it's really pressing the line of what you can get by with and what you can. And there were some scenes, you know, and I don't really want to talk about it and give the show that much publicity, but I was really appalled at one particular scene in the first episode that I really was caught by surprise. And I don't know, this show makes me feel rather uncomfortable, but go ahead.
But you know, I think it's supposed to. But one of the things I was talking with at dinner was that, you know, if you buy into depopulation and Agenda 21 and all that stuff, right? One of the things that has to happen, there's this thing from the Georgia Guidestones, this guidance of 300 million, right? In my estimation, that's 300 million in the West. That the third world would be used as a factory state, and that 300 million are in the West, right? Well, one of the things that you need to do in order to hit that number is that you need to strip out the middle class, the technician class. You need to strip it out. And one of the ways that you do that is most large-scale empires, when they fall to a hedonistic state, right? A narcissistic hedonistic state where, you know, your narcissism and your hedonism compel your life. And what American Horror Story does, it reinforces that kind of hedonistic, you know, that kind of hedonistic view.
Although
negatively, but it does, and that hedonism is one of the elements that they use to break down the technician class. Because one of the things you got to remember, right? Whether you've got computers or an AI or whatever, you know, you always need technicians to man the machinery. Because if the machinery breaks down, until you have a fully sentient AI, you still need somebody to go out and to fix it. So you always have a technician class, no matter what. Every dystopian future always has a technician class. So there's a very thin technician class. There's the guys at the top, then everybody else is a wage slave. So
it really is.
Yeah, and you need, you know, that's, and if you look at like per capita, the number of children that the couples have now, you know, when in the baby boomer generation, it was like the upper threes, 3.8 or whatever. Now it's fallen, you know, it's fallen to like 2.1, you know, and there are countries, Western countries, where they're no longer maintaining subsistence levels of, you know, having children. So they're no longer repopulating. They're actually in decline. And that's the objective.
Do you think it's because it's through many reasons, but a big reason is there's no more resources almost left. And, you know, there probably is, but, you know, a lot is took away. But what isn't there is what they destroyed with the, you know, big corporations and all these, you know, and I'm from West Virginia. And, you know, whenever I'm driving through getting out of Charleston, DuPont State, chemical plants, and they're as far as your eye can see, you know, it's crazy three-eyed fish. I mean, people swim, and then there's these you know, nuclear steam things. I mean, and that's
the kind of
thing. I wish I could. Yeah. Well, hey, dude, thank you. I appreciate that. Hey, corrected there. But what we was talking about earlier about, you know, the Stanley Kubrick, I'm glad that we got back on that because, you know, ultimately, Olaf, him having enough balls to make Eyes Wide Shut, I was wanting to tell you about that. See, whenever Kubrick made Eyes Wide Shut, he brought the final cut in, because what we watch today ain't obviously the original cut, because
right.
He was allegedly he was killed 3 days after he sent that into I think Warner Brothers, or it's one of them big big budget film houses, but
right.
Yeah, he got killed 3 days after, and what we got was a chopped and screwed version, you know, kind of like them songs where they just you know, but that's a thing. But we still got to see, the radio, taking it back. But, you know, but what's really cool is we did get to see that masquerade scene, and that scene right there will always be burnt into my mind.
Well, you know, one of the things, right, is that for whatever reason, and I've never understood whether it's to flaunt it or they have to do it, or, you know, I don't understand why. There are a lot of competing theories on why, but they telegraph this stuff. They tell us what they're going to do. They show us what they do. And I don't know if it's flaunting it or why they do it exactly, but they always do. And when you're watching Eyes Wide Shut, you're seeing a glimpse into what they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's exactly. That masquerade scene, I mean, that's the Hellfire Club. You know, that's the Hellfire Club. Just, you know, replace Tom Cruise and put Ben Franklin in there. You know, it's like,
Could you imagine Ben Franklin killing kids and running naked and like fornicating with many probably prostitutes and just big orgies and all this stuff. See, and that's the thing is, you know, even Crowley, you know, whenever he was doing the OTO and all that other stuff, it was all in England. You know, there was a lot of, that's where, you know, it's really deep seated right there, especially with the royals and especially that scumbag, Saville.
Well, but, you know, the thing is that, you know, we see it most recently in England and in here because a lot of what we have came from England. But that kind of stuff goes all the way back. I mean, the Romans did it. Caligula was famous for it.
Oh, hell, you
know,
yeah.
So that
was a great movie, too, man. That was a stellar movie, too. Go ahead.
It was a stellar movie. But you know, again, these are things that, you know, have always existed over time. The elite class has always done that.
But now let's look at the clothes now a lot. Like, I went in the Pacific somewhere, and I went to these random places, and then you see the Eye of Horus and the pyramids and on clothes. So it's basically like, hey, we're right here. And I've always let, you know, since I've done, you know, research for years and years and years, and I think it takes years to really understand the occult connection to it all. You know, a lot of people will say yes, everything, but it really does take years of research to nail it to that occult connection. And whenever you figure it out, you never can forget. You do. You can't leave your mind, and you do. You see it in all. It's just, you know, in the loss. You're exactly right, Allah.
You see it in the logos, you know, you see the agendas, everything is around you. You can't, it's good and it's bad. I mean, you kind of get to a point where you can't turn it off. You know, you have to learn how to deal with it, otherwise it will consume you.
Well, man, I'll tell you something. I'll tell you what's crazy, and I think I've talked to you about it before, but, you know, I started getting back into the Grateful Dead after not listening to them for a long time. And see, you know, shit like that, that's what that really draws you in, you know, because I was writing, not necessarily an expose, but, you know, I really think that they were used during the counterculture. And I don't know if it was to make just everybody drug crazed zombies on acid and LSD, or to have them following somebody and be getting, you know, arrested and incarcerated for selling drugs, or were they selling the drugs making the money with the government at the shows. I mean, it goes deep, and I've got all these crazy stuff in my mind, man. But that's what I'm talking about. It's like it sucks you in. You know, it really does.
Yeah, it does. But you know, one of the things about the counterculture, right, is the counterculture was controlled. I mean, the whole thing was controlled.
Yes,
and,
exactly.
To me, you know, I wasn't a part of the counterculture. I'm not old enough, right? But what it produced was a generation that's now in control that was a product.
Yes.
You know, they were the baby boomers, and it changed the way they think. And I think a lot of times that kind of societal disruption is engineered, and it's engineered to because a lot of times, like, you'll get these people who in the 60s were hippies, and then, like, Sonny Bono, right? Sonny Bono, you know, Sonny and Cher, hippie clothes, right? And what did he turn into? He turned into a Republican, and, you know, he did a 180.
That's right.
So I think that, you know, that kind of thing is engineered in order to get the bounce back. And when you get the bounce back, you know, all these people that were involved in, you know, in the world at that time, you know, they're the ones that are authorized in the Patriot Act. They're the ones who are authorized, you know, drone strikes and spying on us with drones and tapping our phones. And these are all baby boomers who were products of that, you know, that excess. You know,
well, I do believe it was a mass operation of mind control to the masses.
Oh, yeah.
And especially in, you know, because that was when all the, you know, I mean, I wasn't alive clearly back then, but I did a lot of research, you know, and there was, you know, runaway kids and just a bunch of people going to San Francisco at that time. And I believe that a lot of them disappeared too. Like, you know, especially in these occults, because, you know, they used to talk about Charlie, you know what I'm saying? But the thing about was, there was more people. And it's always the guys that get, you know, the guys that has a little bit of intellect, but everybody looks at them as crazy or whatever. They always got to have somebody to pin it on. And, you know, it goes further. But go ahead. Sorry, guys.
But, you know, one of the things about San Francisco in the 60s, counterculture movement, that the CIA was active in San Francisco in the 60s. You know, they were running operations like Midnight Climax, you know, in the city. And basically Midnight Climax was a CIA operated brothel. And they, you know, they, at first it was really designed to test LSD as an interrogation technique, to dose somebody with LSD. They'd bring the Johns in, they'd dose them with LSD, and then they'd interrogate them. Over time, the CIA officers that were involved in it, you know, they're watching these things happen. And they're watching the dynamics of what the Johns and the prostitutes are doing. And it actually changed their perspective and made them understand using sex as a weapon and, you know, how to use that to co-opt people. And, you know, so they were heavily involved in operations inside of San Francisco. I mean, Operation Midnight Climax ran for years.
But you gotta throw the Grateful Dead in that mix though, right there, because that's where it all started, right there on Hayden Ashbury, that whole following. And
right.
They even said that, you know, the Jerry Garcia's wife or something was used in the, you know, in the prison experiments that they'd done on the East Coast. That's where there was an inside connection to all that, you know what I'm saying? And it's just really crazy, but I just think that it was, you know, it really was a psychops, you know what I'm saying? But we could talk about that for like 2 years. We really could, because there's just like so much craziness that's, especially San Francisco, but I lived there before, you know, and almost lost my life there, so it's no longer San Francisco to me, it's San Francisco.
Well, you know, what's odd about San Francisco is that there's a lot of portrayed mysticism about San Francisco, right? That there are a number of people who believe that part of San Francisco is actually part of Mu. you know, and that the peaks around San Francisco make up a chunk of the continent of Mu. And then Golden Gate Park, that's a highly mystical
Golden Gate Park area. Dude, I was familiar with that area, man. I'm telling you what, you go about 3 miles in that place and it gets crazy.
It gets very crazy. It's a crazy place.
It really is. 6 months was enough for me. I was like, I want to go back home.
Well, you know what's odd about San Francisco is that, you know, I'm from that area, and when you leave, it pulls you back.
Oh yeah.
It does.
Because I remember I went back home, but then I did go back that like a couple of weeks later on a Greyhound. I rode a Greyhound twice that from one coast to the next, and it was like 3 days each way. Oh my God, it sucked. But San Francisco was really, and that's where I hung out. And you know, what was really odd was I never really liked the Grateful Dead that much. You know, whenever I was just, you know, and I was just being I wouldn't say like a hippie, but I wouldn't say I was a gutter street punk either. It was just like, I don't know, I just thought I had good taste. But you know what I mean? But like, I was like in that little scene, you know what I'm saying? But it was dark, and there was a lot of people that disappeared, and I think there is really dark elements in that place.
Well, it's the home of the Church of Satan. The Church of Satan was founded there. Later, the Temple of Set, right?
Yeah.
Jim Jones operated the People's Temple from there.
Yeah.
Right. You know, there were a whole variety of other cults that exist in the general vicinity. The other thing that's funny is that, you know, you go there and you don't really think about it, but right off the coast of it is Alcatraz, probably one of the most lethal prisons ever. I mean, the horrendousness of that as a prison. You know, you go across.
And let's not mention Bohemian Grove.
Right, you've got Bohemian Grove up the road. You've got
San Mateo.
San Quentin. Well, it's north of San Mateo.
Yeah.
You've got San Quentin where the electric chair is. You know, it's like you've got. You know, it's very much a kind of balance that you have the kind of bohemianness of San Francisco, but it's got a dark side. You know, there are a lot of gangs, very powerful gangs like the Triad that operate there. You know,
well, you know what's crazy too is I think the Hells Angels. That's what I was ready to tell you, man. Is the Hells Angels has it like a? I mean, I don't. You know what I'm saying? I'm getting a little mush mouth here, but you know, I've done a lot of research, crazy research into, you know, like snuff films and paid move, you know, people paying, you know what I'm saying? There was a Hells Angels got busted up at, if you go up on the serial killers, this guy had this hog farm. And he was a Hells Angels for a long time. They end up all turning, you know, he was the fall guy. But allegedly,
you know,
he had a production company. I'll send you his name later, in a message, and I'll get that case together, because I'm just touching brinking the surface. But anyway, he was a fall guy for that. He had a hog farm, but he also had a production company, and they really thought that allegedly, you know, this is all alleged, but they was really thinking that they were making snuff films. I mean,
what I do know is that they were founded in Oakland. You know, so I mean, you have a very yin yang kind of thing going on there. That there's the light and the happy stuff and the the beauty and the art and the culture. And then you have a very dark side that also exists there.
Yeah,
there's
a dark side there too. Now, but let me say this on a light note. I've never seen anything nice, but you know, anybody on motorcycles, you know, anybody gives drives for kids, and you know what I'm saying, makes it all about that. I respect anybody that does that. You know what I'm saying, anything. You know, the law bikers, you know what I'm saying, there's good and bad in everything, man. You know, I mean, really. You know, it's just like, I mean, there's good and bad in everything. And,
absolutely.
You know, and that's where that's where you, but you know, good researchers like us, that's whenever you know these, you know, all this stuff, you really pick your you pick your dots and you know how to cross them. You know what I mean? Just
I don't know.
That's,
you know, there's good and bad in every person, right?
That's right.
You know, every person, there's a good side and a bad side. They do good things, they do bad things, you know, and ultimately you're judged against the balance of good things versus bad things that you do. Remember the ancient Egyptians, you know, part of their mystery school was to balance your heart against the feather, to see if the good things that you've done have lightened your heart enough against the bad things that weighed it. You know, at judgment, mm-hmm. you were judged against the feather. So you were either, your heart was light because you had done good, or your heart was heavy with evil. You know, and every person, you know, has a balance, and how people get to where they are, you know, that's the journey that they take. And there are people that mm-hmm. reform, and there are people that don't. So I don't, you know, I don't think that any one organization or entity is completely good or completely bad. It's really a mixture of both.
That's right. And, you know, it's just like, you know, when it comes to Satanism, it's just like, as hell, I don't care if people are Satanists or a pagan or anything like that. You know, and I believe in this all off. As long as there's no children being hurt or animals or people being ritualized, you know, and a lot of people laugh at that and call it bullshit. But the thing about it, and I made a post the other day, and this is so true. You know what I'm saying? There's, you know, that magic does exist. It's been practiced for years and years. Well, not years. Oh, my God. I mean, I'm stupid right now. Stupid moment. Centuries. Since the dawn of time.
That all religions, right, use an element of magic. They call it different things. You know, the idea of the Catholic, that the Virgin Mary weeps. You know, that is a supernatural thing. You know, they classify it in a different way because that fits their worldview. But, you know,
there's a lot of
magic.
You know, it's just like, you know, saying, you know, in all religions I've done, you know, I like to do that. I like to look into, study religions, and I study the occult, study all this stuff, you know, and I think it's important. I think it's important, especially if it's dark, to keep it at a safe distance. You know what I'm saying? I might read a book by Aquino. It's not because I fucking like the guy or worship him. I want to, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes you got to read to get the information and the source, then say, well, hey, that's, you know what I'm saying? And when you know what people's, their agendas, and especially Aquino, dude, because he was behind the whole PsychOps. I mean, everything PsychOps, you know? Are you a video gamer? I wanted to ask you that. Are you, because I wanted to tie this. Are you a video gamer? Have you played Metal Gear Solid 5?
I've only played the first level.
Oh, man. You know, there's this upgrade. You'll see it whenever you get a couple levels ahead, but there's this upgrade on the helicopter, and it's to put speakers onto the helicopter, and it mentions that it says it, and you know, it even has this little, it says it's never been proven to be, you know, whatever, you know, exactly like how it really was. But the thing about that was you know, Aquino came up with that, and you know, and I think that he was responsible for a lot of downed choppers because of that method. Because they realized they could flip and shoot them down, man. You know what I mean? With one of them guns that shoots down helicopters. I don't know all these names, but I think you have the idea.
The Empire.
Yes, sorry. That would be it, sir. I love it. It's a great night, man. It really is. You know, it's always a pleasure for you to come on here, man. And I know we've been talking a lot about just, you know, we've been going around all over the place, but
all over the place.
It's great. It really is. But Olaf, when are you going to be speaking this weekend?
So I'm going to be speaking on Sunday. I forget the time.
But well, it's cool.
I think 10:30, I think, on Sunday. It's on the website.
Nice. AM?
Program. Huh?
Oh, I just said so. I said 8 a.m., like, no, in p.m.
Yeah.
at night,
no,
you know?
It's like 10 a.m., I think. Yeah, I think it's like 10:30.
What kind of... Maybe the after party is at that time, but no, that's not, you know what I'm saying.
Well, no,
I'm
2 hours ahead of my normal time, something. It's 8 a.m.
Oh, man, I hate that, dude.
Yeah.
I hate the, see, I'm from the East Coast, so it's just like, even I live in Chicago now, and it's always, that hour's always, like, screwed me, like, one way or the other.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I'm, like, I'm going on trips, I feel
like
it's always. I know, I feel out of place all the time, man. I really know. I've got adjusted, but you always seem like you lose an hour wherever you go.
Don't go to Europe, because then, you know, you lose 10 hours or 8 hours.
Well, dude, my sister's in Australia, and I forbid to go there to see her. I'm like, I don't want to see everything backwards.
Beautiful.
Oh, I do. I wanted to go also while I was over there to New Zealand and see the Hobbit world, if that was still available.
Mm-hmm.
If that was still
sure.
Still, of course.
Me too.
Dude, wouldn't that be? That would be awesome, man. That would.
Awesome.
It would, dude. And wasn't you talking about Mad Max? We were talking about Mad Max. I'm just gonna squeeze in that while we're talking real quick. Man, wasn't that the most awesome new movie that you've seen in a long time?
It is the most awesome new movie I've seen in a long time.
Hey, oh, man.
Yeah.
Just everything. Dude, there's a lot of movies, and I'm like a movie snob. I mean, I could really do, that's what I should do. It's like movie reviews and stuff like that. Cause I watch
sure.
a lot of movies, man, and I'm like a critique. I catch myself critiquing a lot, but there was not a movie
yeah.
that blew me away
that.
The power
of that movie is that, you know, the same guy wrote and directed it that did all the others. So it's consistent. It fits into Mad Max, sorry, you know, fits into it nicely. You know, you're seeing him before he's, you know, after he's in the MFP, but before he, you know, he loses the interceptor and before he starts to really go nuts, you know, so you're seeing him in that time when he's kind of becoming more crazy. And it's, magic.
Go ahead. You know, see, I think that they screwed the time. They say that it's in that timeline before Road Warrior, but I really think that, let's just throw that out. I really think that the boy is Tom Hardy's Max, and then, you know, he took the name Max because, you know, obviously he made such an impression on that boy, you know, a couple things to soften my theory a little bit is a lot of grunting and growling and noise making on the behalf of Tom Hardy in that movie. And let's just say that he had the supporting role in that movie. You know what I mean? I mean, it was clearly a feminine film in a lot of aspects, which I didn't mind. I like that, especially the villain. I love the villain, but I really think that, and I think that Immortan Joe is really the Mel Gibson Max.
Well,
after years,
to me, when I watched it, right, the kid that's consistent through it, you know, the one with the boomerang, that kid in the, when you get to Thunderdome, that's the person who's reciting the story of Max. Went there, we did this, you know, that's that person's role is the history keeper of Max.
Talk Thunder what? Max. I don't know. I'm not familiar with it. No, I'm just No, I actually like Thunderdome, dude. I really do, man. A lot of people get it is. It really is. A lot of people give a shit, but I do like it. I mean, I know there's like Tina Turner and all that, but hey, Tina Turner was also good in Tommy as the Gypsy Acid Queen, if you remember that.
Well, Tina Turner's just a fantastic singer and actress, but you know, the
She's a little conceited, I must say. She's got fucking songs like "I'm Simply the Best," "Better Than All the Rest." I mean, that's a little conceited. I'm trying to do a bit, man. But
yeah, but you know, the thing about the various one thing that's interesting about the guy who plays the bad guy is that it's actually mm-hmm. the same actor from the first movie.
Oh yeah, yeah, Toe Cutter, yeah,
same actor. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the guy who played Toe Cutter is the guy who's the giant.
Isn't that just amazing? But then we could say though that.
But he's not the same person.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know. I mean, you know, it's, but see, that's the thing about fan theories. We can like twist it up and mangle it up into
sure.
our perception and be like, you know, saying, I love that. But you know what I'm saying? I wonder what he's going to do with part two, man. I mean, that's one of the, allegedly, the working title was called Wasteland. I don't know if it's going to be changed or not, but man, it really, I'm really looking for.
Well, he's kept it remarkably consistent. And I think that that's, you know, being a writer myself, you know, being consistent can be very challenging. And I think the level of consistency that he's achieved is staggering. You know, you really, if you put the movies in the right order, you really see the deterioration of a man.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Here's this guy, you know, he's in the MFP. It's kind of like the highway patrol. You know, he starts there. He's very much trying to keep what's left of society together. And he never completely loses that, you know, that need to be the good guy. But, you know, you watch the dismantling of him over time.
But he don't stick around either, you know. He don't stick around either. Like, you know, he might see that the day's done, but then he's gone to the next. You know,
he's
I love that. I love that spirit.
He's a wanderer, yeah. And he's the anti-hero, right? That
there's
a lot of things about him that you don't like. There are a lot of things about him that you don't want to like. But he's heroic when it comes down to it.
You know,
what pissed me off, man.
You know what pissed me off is when the fucking dog died in the Road War. When I was a kid, man, I forbid to watch that for years because the dog died, man. I'm telling you, it messed me up. But I'm telling you, a good experience next time you watch Fury Road is turn off all the color. Like if you're using a computer or something, like on a VLC player, turn all the color off and watch it in black and white. Dude, that will flip.
But, you know, he's such a powerful filmmaker that you can watch it pretty much in any state, and I think you'd find that it's a masterwork. You know, any of those movies. Yeah, you can watch him as a slideshow, and it's still impressive.
yeah, if he just drawn it, if I just seen the concept art and this book of just how he put it together, hey, that would I'd be impressed by that, too.
Oh yeah, the tones and the music and the moments and the and the other thing about him is that he really draws out good acting.
Yeah,
you know, he's making
these
people that are basically insane, but he's making them. You know, you watch The Giant Humongous and you think, wow, that guy's an evil bastard. But at the same time, you know, you can understand where he's coming from. It's a wasteland. It's like, you know, what he's doing is horrible, but at the same time, you feel for him that he's been put in this situation where he had to become that.
Yeah. I like whenever he chokes that one guy out, man, because he killed his lover. What the kid did with the boomerang, and then he's like,
right.
"We go in, we kill," and then he puts him in choke. He's like, "No, we do it my way," or something like that, along them lines. I mean, that's just a classic. I mean, it just don't get no better than the movies, man. I'm glad we was able to. It's about ready to cut off on us at any time, man. Olaf, listen.
Yes.
I'm glad you was able to join us. Always a pleasure. Always welcome back. You know, you can let loose on my show. You know, everybody's, you know, it's just like Nori and Art so uptight. But, you know, I feel that people sometimes, especially in our generation, people, you know, saying sometimes we express ourselves way differently than the older class, you know, and that's a thing about us, you know, younger, you know, I ain't gonna call us young, but you know, we're not great barkers, you know what I mean? It's just like we're a new breed of researchers. We're